The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Commander Eugene Flueke, with four Navy Crosses and the Medal of Honor, is one of the most highly decorated servicemen in American history. Details after this. Flueke submarine moving along the China coast located a convoy of more than 30 Japanese ships anchored in a harbor. The harbor was shallow and heavily mined with threatening rock formations. If he got close enough to attack, it would require a run at full speed under very dangerous conditions. Flueke ordered the attack anyway. In water only 30 feet deep, he maneuvered to within range and launched four torpedoes from the forward tubes and four from the rear tubes. He watched eight direct hits, turned his sub around, and headed for open sea. He was awarded the Medal of Honor by Navy Secretary James Forrestal on March 23, 1945. 4 months later, Flueke, after sinking an enemy frigate, landed a shore party on the Japanese coast which set an explosive device on railroad track that destroyed a military train. This was the only combat operation on the Japanese mainland during the war. Flueke retired in 1972 as a Rear Admiral. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Well, we're back at Veterans Radio, and there I was. So, going back to BFW Post 423 in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and your host, Dale Throneberry.
Here at VFW Post 423, also the home of VVA 310 and American Legion Post 46. And we appreciate and we want to thank everybody that allowed us to utilize their facilities, and we will be using them every Wednesday, the last Wednesday of every month. That's what that sentence was supposed to sound like. And hopefully we can spread the word to our friends and neighbors and families and so forth, and maybe get a few more people out here to join the discussion. So joining us right now with his story of how he got involved with the military and as an Army veteran and a fellow New Jerseyite, and that is, Tim, when were you in the service?
65 to 67.
65 to 67, and so joining me at the microphone right now is Tim Driscoll, and Tim, thank you very much. Come on down.
Thank you, Dale. There was nothing boring about getting drafted. You did watch the newspapers, you did talk to your friends, and you wonder, boy, what's that going to be like? You know, growing up for me was just a little bit different from most guys. We moved around an awful lot. I had a dad that drank quite a bit. I went to 23 schools before I got drafted. Lived all over New York, New Jersey, and sometimes I was with my family, sometimes I was with foster homes. But you know, no matter where I lived, when you went to school, it was very respectful back then. You know, you learned your courses, you treated people like you should be treated. Everybody in the neighborhood beside your family or whoever was taking care of you could hit you. You really had to behave yourself at all times, you know. The grown-ups were not going to let you really get away with anything. But pretty soon I found out that my mom was having really pretty hard time trying to keep a job and take care of my brother and myself. And it came down to I really have got to quit high school and go get a job. Couldn't get a real good paying one. I'm only 16. But I went and got three. Well, that worked out pretty good. Let's see, if I work this one real good job in electrical company, that's a pretty good job, and I can take that, and that'll pay for the house and the food and stuff until Mom gets back working again. That'll work out. And then there was another job delivering some papers, and I could do that early in the morning. And then there was a job delivering, at a gas station, taking care of people's automobiles, and I get a quarter for extra quart of oil I would sell. That was good money, and I was good at it and did my job well. And except one day I get home there. By this time, I got a nice car, and everything's going along pretty well, and everything's okay at home. And there's this big envelope in the mailbox. And you know what that means. You're gone with the wind. And I said, geez, look at this. This is going to be different. And like Dale was saying, well, if we go to Newark, New Jersey, and they turn around and they test you for this and they test you for that. And got down to checking my hearing. And I sit down there, and the guy says, okay, give me the thumbs up when you hear something, the thumbs down when you don't. And he does his thing with the dials, and nothing. I don't hear nothing. Hey, maybe I'm going to get out of this. Maybe I'm deaf. I'm going deaf and don't know it. And, you know, after a while, at that point, you know, I was 18. And a little bit probably tough life. You don't really respect anybody getting nasty to you. This guy says, look, you're going to be in the Army, and you got to listen to me, and I'm in charge, and you got to start doing this test properly. I said, let me tell you something. I don't care about you. I don't care about your test. I don't care about your Army. I'm not being rude to you. I can't hear. I'm sorry. You know, you ought to shape up. Then we noticed at the same time that the wire's not plugged into the wall. Well, all of a sudden, we're friends, we're buddies, you know, thanking me a whole lot. And pretty soon, you know, a few weeks are going by, it's around Christmas time, you know, it was October 18th, that's what it was, and I'm off to Fort Dix, and then, you know, you turn around, and you get to have a whole new way of life, and I want to save the rest of it for actually being in Fort Dix. So that's my story up to this point. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, it's funny when we listen to ourselves telling our stories of how we tried to avoid getting into the service no matter what we could do. And I was talking to an Iraq, Afghanistan veteran, and it was a female, and she was telling me that she did everything possible to get into the service. He says, because they rejected her initially for some medical issue. And she said, I went to a specialist and got a special letter and so on and so forth so that I could get in the service. And you guys are all talking about how you're trying to, you know, finagle a way out of it. And I don't know if we were finagling, really. I think we were just scared. I mean, this was something that was really the unknown. And, you know, we did see all the movies with Audie Murphy and John Wayne, and they never got hurt. But, or if they did, they got up and they were in another film. And, you know, we were reading the newspapers, and as we were talking about, you know, the history of the Vietnam War in many cases, because all of the people here tonight were involved at that time, is that we started seeing it in the newspapers and on TV. And so that started making it, you know, getting a little bit closer to home. And then maybe you heard about somebody from your local town that didn't make it and so forth. So it did get a little bit serious, and I think we were getting a little nervous about those things. But transitioning gracefully here to to our woman guest for the night. And this is Sandy Wilson, and Sandy retired from the Army as a captain. She was a nurse in Vietnam, and she's got, I think, a great story just as well to talk about how she got involved in the service. So, Sandy Wilson, come on to the microphone. Thank you.
Let me assure you, I was not afraid of being drafted. But, you know, my oldest brother and I grew up in very close, and he was in this thing called ROTC in order to be able to pay for college. And he was doing his time. And he cheated the government because he got injured during his first year and spent the rest of his military time in rehab and in the hospital and stuff. And I had finished nursing school, and he said, sis, you'd really like the Army. The nurses there are so good and everything like that. And I thought, okay. So I had a nice civilian job. I finally signed my life away buying a new car so I wouldn't have to take the bus anymore. And the recruiter was chasing me, so I sat down and talked to him. He said, that'd probably be pretty good. So they sent me down for a physical, And I wasn't in line with 500 other guys, let me assure you of that. It was the quickest physical that ever was as they rushed me through. And I failed the physical. So I says, okay, we're done with that. And about 6 months later, the recruiter came looking for me again because now they thought I could pass the physical. And I just looked at them. So then they tried to guilt trip me. Just think of all these boys that are being drafted. In this man's world, am I going to have men's rights if I do go? And they looked at me kind of funny. Okay. And it took them a while, and we started negotiating. And finally they said to me, don't worry about going to Vietnam, because we only send the volunteers, and they have to be the brightest and best. Well, that didn't include me. So I agreed to go, but we had to negotiate it to where I went in with a first lieutenant rank instead of a second lieutenant, and it took some while. So I finally go, and I take my car that I have been working to pay for in July and drove it to Fort Sam Houston, Texas. And let me assure you, it was convertible, but back in those days, if you bought a car in the fall or the winter, you didn't get air conditioning living here. It was not air conditioned. And it was, by the time I got to Texas, I was a little bit drenched from sweat.
You know, those of you that are listening to this, you really need to come out on the last Friday of August, or last Wednesday of August. I get this right sooner or later. And follow up with the stories of boot camp or training or whatever it was that they call it where you went, or vacation. I don't know exactly what some of the stories I've heard from our friends here about their boot camp experiences. Some of them were really horrific, and some of them sounded like they went to, you know, summer camp. And I think that that's part of the whole thing that we're anxious to talk about. All right, so we're going to continue right along with our stories right now. And coming up now is we have a Navy guy, CB, you know, CBs can do. And this is Larry San Antoine, and Larry was in the service from 64 to 70. I don't know, he did unlimited tours in Vietnam, and he got out as an E-4. What was an E-4 in the Navy?
Third class.
Okay. A petty.
Well, my saga starts in 1964. I was a junior in high school, playing football, playing baseball, enjoying life like John, chasing girls, or hopefully chasing girls. And one day, the recruiters came through the high school, talked to the Air Force. Okay. Talked to the Army. I didn't like their uniforms. Talked to the Marines. I liked them. Then I talked to the Navy guy, and his first question to me, he says, what kind of experience do you have? I says, well, I worked construction with my dad since I was 8 years old. He says, oh, you want to be a CB? I said, what the hell is a CB? He says, well, you do construction. You know, you're a plumber, you're an electrician, you're a builder. And we have a reserve unit right here in Detroit, down at Broadhead Naval Army. You can join it and do your reserve time. You do 6 years, two years active. I said, He says, and you do nine-month tours overseas, just like the regular Navy. And the Seabees go to Hollyloch, Scotland for 9 months and come back for 3 months, then go to Rota, Spain for 9 months and come back for 3 months. I said, oh, God, sign me up. He says, well, you're 16. You got to have your dad sign. I says, well, give me the paperwork. So that night I brought the papers to my dad, and I said, I'm joining the Seabees. He says, what the hell is a CB? And I said, well, construction. He says, okay, I'll sign. So joined the RMCB 26, Broadhead Naval Army. I did my 2 years ready reserve, going to meetings, building stuff, working out all over the place. And then, unfortunately, in 64, there wasn't much going on in Vietnam, but when I went active duty in 66, well, my when I went to the East Coast to find out where I was going, and they give you a sheet that says, well, name three places you want to go. And I said, oh, Holly Lock, Scotland, Road to Spain, and Ireland. And the gunny sergeant kind of laughed. He says, well, he crossed them off. He put Vietnam, Vietnam, Vietnam. And so that was my introduction into the Seabees. I did spend between my junior and senior year at boot camp, 11 weeks at Broadhead Naval Army, which I will maybe talk about next month when we're here. But basically, that was my introduction. I didn't get drafted. I wasn't old enough at that time. I did get a draft notice, though, when I was 16 for my cousin who has the same name. But I brought it to him and gave it to him, and so he was happy. But basically, that was how I was introduced to the service and Vietnam. Thank you.
Any other volunteers? Want to tell us how you got involved in the service?
Like me to speak?
Yes, I would. All right, so we're coming from way back in our crowded facilities here. We've got Horace Fraser. Yeah, how did you decide that you were going to join the military? Or did you?
After this was being planned, you asked me to bring my guitar, so I threw it in the ride and brought it.
Oh, okay. Well,
my name is Horace Fraser, Jr. I was drafted. I registered for the draft when I lived in San Bernardino, California. And I was still in high school, my senior year. And I had to go register, and I went and registered. And after registering, I wind up going to junior college for a few months. After going to college, I dropped out to move back to Michigan, where I was born, Ypsilanti, Michigan. And I got a job working at Ford Motor Company, Rawsonville plant. Upon finding out, I got this letter from my uncle saying, greetings from the President of the United States. It's time to go take a physical. So I wind up going down to Wayne, Fort Wayne, to take my physical. I passed my physical. And so I started thinking, well, it's time to start packing up my things and getting ready to go into the service. I was going to quit my job at Ford Motor Company because I didn't know that to see a union rep at the time that they would instruct you to not quit your job but go take a military leave of absence. So that's what I did once the union representative got a hold of me and found that I was being drafted. So I had a job to return to after I came home from the service. My first duty station, or my basic, was Fort Ord, California. I decided to go back to California because that's where my parents was at. So I got inducted into the service in L.A., where they took us up to Fort Ord, California. My dad took me to the, what is it? It was the Orange Show. It's like a fairgrounds for San Bernardino. They have a lot of different shows there and stuff like that, and fairs and stuff. And that was the place where all of the buses met to take people down to L.A. to go to the induction center there and then go up to Fort Ord, California. So I got a chance to say goodbye to my folks. My dad, while I was there, being a minister, he decided to stick a testament in my hand and kind of say, okay, see you later. You got my blessings. So I think I kept that testament throughout the whole service of my time. Once I finished basic at Fort Ord, My mom came up from San Bernardino and picked with my sister that lived in San Francisco, and they came to my graduation, and I went in like a 140-pound weakling, and I think by the time that they saw me, I was 180 pounds or 85, you know, big and bulky and everything. They almost didn't recognize me with all of the other troops that was out there in the parade field. I got my orders to go to Fort Sill, Oklahoma.
Yes, we're going to get coming back. Does anybody else want to go? Okay, so we got another Air Force gentleman here. I use the term loosely. both. Both. So the idea is there's Vance McCrum, who is the United States Air Force dog handler, ARF, and he went in way back. I think he was in the Civil War, but I'm not sure. So he'll probably tell us about how Lincoln sent him the letter.
Thank you, Dale. My name is Vance McCrum, and I did enlist in the United States Air Force. I pre-enlisted in high school. We had recruiters that came to our high school, Lincoln High School, here in the Ann Arbor, Ypsilanti area, Lincoln Consolidated High School, and there were all branches of service recruiters there ganging up on us. This was in early 1963. Vietnam was not in the news. Didn't know what it was or where it was, but the Navy or the Army Air Force recruiter was successful in convincing me that that's where I needed to go. Plus, I had a love of aircraft, you know, just seeing them fly, and I used to draw pictures of them when I was a little kid. And so I pre-enlisted in my senior year in high school. And I took a deferment, if you will, for 6 months before I was actually inducted. I had all the physicals and did all the tests and stood around in my underwear and wondering why all these guys were wearing boxers and I'm not. I'm wearing these, you know, whitey tighties and stuff, you know, which were quickly changed much later. And as you've heard some of the other stories about the physicals and stuff, and the branch of service that you were going to didn't determine what kind of physical you got. We all got the same physicals. I took a 6 months deferment because I figured once I was in the Air Force, I wouldn't be able to sleep till noon after I graduated from high school in June of 1963. I was in the Air Force from January 17th, 1963, or 64 through January the 17th, 1967. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Do I have a story?
Do you have a story, Bob?
I have a story. It'll have to be a quick one, but I have a story. How much time do we have?
You probably have about 5 minutes or so.
I'll take three.
Okay.
All right, here we go. 2 weeks after high school, which most of us really didn't have much planned, sitting at a little league game with a fellow by the name of Phil Zimmerman I went to school with, we're watching, and he says, you know, why don't we go in the Army on the buddy plan? I hadn't even thought about that, going anywhere. 2 weeks after high school, where the heck was I going to go? What was I going to do? He says, let's go in the Army buddy plan. Sounds like a good deal to me. How do we do all that? Well, we found out it was 3 years. And, you know, years mean a lot to me. So I volunteered for the draft, and so did Phil. We went down to Fort Street, Detroit, and signed up for the draft, and I've completely actually forgot about it. You're right. Somebody else said it was 6 weeks, and sure enough, it was 6 weeks and got the letter. There it is. I'm going in the Army. And down to Fort Wayne, and I can see a couple of heads here shaking their heads. Yeah, good old Fort Wayne. And it was, I don't know, what was it, 0600, 0500 we had to be there, 0700 something, really. Yeah, John, was that something like that? Yeah, it was early, but it wasn't too bad. There was Mom and Dad. Remember, I had my orders in my hand, And I looked at that gatehouse, and that was the portal. It was walking through a fog. Because from then on, when I was outside, I looked back to Mom and Dad. Mom said, "Now you do what the sergeant says." "Yeah, sure, Ma." "Yeah, do what the sergeant and Dad go get him, kid." And when I walked up to the guardhouse, I turned around. They were gone. They were gone. And I looked, and there it was, walked through the portal. And I don't know why I thought I was going to then continue to walk over to the building where they were going to swear us in. That was the last time you see anybody walking around, right? Darn right. You get in a Jeep, you travel. Wait here. And that was, yes, Fort Wayne. Wait here. They came with I think they had a three-quarter ton truck, took us over to the building. That building's still there, by the way. Fort Wayne is still there, and so's that building. They swore us in, took us on buses to the train station.
We took
a train. I mean, and all we were sworn in, of course, so we were all in. We got our lunch or dinner or whatever on the train, and there we were headed for Fort Knox, Louisville. Did I say it right? Yeah, the guys are smiling. Louisville, sure, do that in town, you're dead man. So there we were. We came into Louisville. We got on the buses. We went to the barracks. Standing outside the barracks, I remember this, he had a big box, and there was about 40 of us, and he said, "I want you to put any weapons, dirty pictures, dirty jokes, everything that you have in that box." Oh, you know who got that box later, huh? Come on, guys. And sure enough, no knives. And some of the guys had blades because we hadn't been searched anything. We'd been all night on the train. So they didn't fill the box, but they put a lot of stuff in there. Welcome to the U.S. Army, and I had 2 years to go.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you very much. It's interesting the way that everybody kind of got into this service. I was thinking, some of you were mentioning recruiters coming to talk to you, and I guess I don't remember recruiters at the high school in New Jersey. Maybe they didn't want us. I don't know. Maybe that could have been, too. That could have been, too. It turns out it's really kind of interesting. And I want to thank everybody for sharing their stories this evening. And next month, we are going to be talking about basic training. And we're going to be talking about what went on there and who was your favorite sergeant and some of the other adventures that you might have had in basic training. So we're hoping that you will all come back and join us here on There I Was on the last Wednesday of August is when it's going to be. So tell your friends, tell anybody that you can think of, have them come on out. I think this has been fun and helpful, and it's interesting to find out what other people have gone through. So until next time, you are dismissed.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows by going to veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Veterans Radio needs you. If you like our shows that are informative, surprising stories, and relevant information on what's happening at the VA and the military, we'd like your support. Individual support of $5 to $50 a month or corporate sponsorship of $1,000 to $10,000 would be welcomed. You can go to veteransradio.net, click on the sponsorship or support tab, pay online, and keep Veterans Radio on the air.